Hello, I'm Rob, a producer on The Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 16th of December, 2020.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. First, I start with a note for our listeners. With Christmas on the horizon, the Black Country Talking News will be taking a 2-week break after this edition, and will be returning in the new year starting on the 6th of January. Reading this week, we have writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Christine, Ian, Angela, myself Rob, Edward, Helen, David, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, Mina's Christmas cracker, a flight of fancy from Graham, a double header of football news from Wolves and West Brom, and on This Week in History with Flashback Roger, the weather, and a brief look at the history surrounding the UK's decision to join the European Common Market. But to begin, I must give you the answer for the brain teaser set for you last week by Mina in her Christmas cracker. She asked the following. Which five-letter word links these terms? Wall, politics, line, and pack. And the answer is party. As in party wall, party politics, party line, and party pack. If you didn't get that one, don't worry, there's another to ponder later. But now we head to the news, read by Ian, Angela, Ed, and kicking us off, Christine.
More than £13 million will be given to hospitals in the Black Country and Staffordshire to help tackle urgent maintenance issues by March 2021. NHS hospital staff, patients and visitors across all regions in the Midlands will benefit from refurbished wards, brand new electrics and upgraded ventilation systems by next spring. The Midlands has been allocated £101 million for 299 maintenance projects across 30 trusts as part of a £600 million investment by the government. It includes £3.7 million for two projects at Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust, earmarked for replacement and refurbishments to theatres at Walsall Manor Hospital. It also includes £3.1 million for nine projects at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, £1.2 million for one project at the Dudley Group NHS Trust, £1.8 million for nine projects at Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, and £3.2 million for 19 projects at University Hospitals North Midlands NHS Trust, which runs Stafford County Hospital. Health Secretary Matt Hancock said, alongside delivering on our manifesto commitment to build 40 new hospitals and 20 major hospital upgrades across the country, this investment will help our NHS build back better. These crucial maintenance projects will deliver immediate benefits and provide NHS staff with the facilities they need to provide world-class care to their patients this winter, helping ensure the NHS is always there for you when you need it.
Council tax in Dudley is set to increase by more than £1 a week as bosses look to invest more in services for the elderly. Across Dudley, more than £5 million is to be invested in adult social care, with money earmarked to meet the rising costs of social care for people with complex dementia and learning disabilities. Also, £3.5 million is to be invested in placements for looked-after children and money for targeting antisocial behaviour, recruiting extra police community support officers and continuing the work of the SCAMS team supporting adult social care. To do this, the council is planning to increase the basic rate of council tax by 1.99% next year, with a further 3% for services for older and more vulnerable people. This increase equals £1.03 extra a week for a Band B property in the borough. Councillor Steve Clark, Dudley's Council Cabinet Member for Finance, said, "This has been a year like no other, and we know there are still difficult times ahead. COVID continues to impact our lives in ways we could never have imagined and brought unprecedented challenges to our public services. We never take a decision to increase council tax lightly. However, with levels in Dudley some of the lowest in the country and the lowest in the Black Country, increases are difficult to avoid if we want to continue to provide services people will be proud of. The proposals, which also include just over £5 million of savings, will be put to Cabinet on December the 17th before residents get to have their say in a consultation."
Two house party organisers in the Black Country have been fined after breaching Tier 3 regulations in the region. Officers from West Midlands Police shut down two parties in the Wensfield area of Wolverhampton on Saturday night. Fines of £1,000 were handed to both organisers of the events, as well as £200 fines for everyone else in attendance. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "Wensfield officers attended two incidents of COVID breaches on Saturday night. Two house parties were shut down and the organisers now face a £1,000 fine, and everyone else present a £200 fine. There is no excuse to ignore the current Tier 3 rules." Wolverhampton, along with the entire Black Country and the majority of the West Midlands, was placed into Tier 3, very high alert area, when the government introduced its updated tier system after the national lockdown ended earlier this month. Under Tier 3 regulations, people are banned from mixing indoors with anyone from other households or in any private outdoor setting.
Petitions signed by more than 5,000 people to halt the closure of police stations in the Black Country have been officially submitted to a police chief. Jay Singh Sohal, who has spearheaded the campaign, handed them over to Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, David Jameson's office. The petitions concerned stations in Aldridge, Tipton and Wensfield, earmarked for closure under West Midlands Police's controversial estate scheme. It was brought in by Mr Jameson and Chief Constable Dave Thompson to save officer jobs in the wake of budget cuts, but has been delayed due to COVID-19. Conservative candidate Mr Singh Sohal, who is vying for the Crime Commissioner role, said the Labour PCC needed to do more with stations instead of trying to axe them. Mr Singh Sohal said, "The fact that thousands of people have signed these petitions illustrates the huge level of concern over the plans to close local police stations. Communities across the region are desperate to keep their police stations and the local police presence they bring. I would like to thank everyone who's taken time to make their voice heard on this issue."
More than 100 Christmas hampers have been handed out to schools across Wolverhampton to be given to vulnerable families this festive season. Volunteers at Excel Church Food Bank in Bilston put a call out to members of the community for donations for the hampers, and also funded a number of them, which were packed full of tasty Christmas treats. The hampers, which are filled with biscuit selection boxes, chocolates, sweets for children, Christmas puddings, bags of peanuts and more, have now been given to several local schools the church works closely with. These include Lanesfield Primary, Bilston CV Primary, Lockdale Primary, Fieldview Primary and Villiers Primary. John Raj of the Excel Church Food Bank said, "We realised that quite a few families in Bilston and the local area would be without specific things at Christmas, so we've been working closely with local schools to try and help with this. We also had more than 100 toys donated by the Seek Toy Appeal. We have distributed the first batch of hampers and have more to deliver too, and will be sending these out over the next 2 weeks." The Deputy Mayor of Wolverhampton, Greg Brackenridge, attended the church to help present the Christmas hampers that were prepared by the food bank. Mr Raj added, "I'd just like to thank all of our team of volunteers who have been working on this. You don't normally see the planning behind and everything that has happened, but there's been a team of 25, possibly 30 people behind the scenes. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do this."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen with the latest roundup of everything that's been happening at the Beacon Centre. Normally, this last week before Christmas, it's incredibly busy at the Beacon Centre. We so enjoy celebrating the festive season with you all, and it's one of the things we've missed the most during this strange and challenging year. We hope, though, that you've been able to plan something for Christmas, whether it's a socially distanced meeting with a friend or being able to spend some time with those you've missed the most. If you're buying presents for friends or family this year, don't forget to drop into one of our shops where you can pick up some beautiful Christmas gifts at a bargain price. Our Blockswitch store has created its very own Christmas Eve box filled with goodies to enjoy the night before Christmas. We've got shops right across the region, as well as in Blockswitch. You can find them at our main site in Sedgley, Hales Owen, Cannock, Penkridge, Bilston, and our Wolverhampton warehouse, where you can get everything you need to spruce up your home. To find out more about any of our stores, including their opening hours, ring 01902 880 111 and press option 2. For some really unique festive gifts, you can now buy our personalised Christmas decorations via the Dudley Borough Virtual Christmas Market website. Just order and pay online, and we'll let you know when your orders are ready to collect from our centre in Sedgley. Every purchase helps support someone with sight loss. There's a range of gifts available, including personalised Christmas trees, mugs and snowflakes. Head to www.crowdfunder.co.uk/personalised-christmas-decorations to place your order. Next up, it's a last chance alert. That's right, it's your last chance to enter our festive raffle. The prizes up for grabs include a family day out at Dudley Zoo and a Christmas hamper full of goodies to help you enjoy the festive season. Best of all, it costs just £2 per ticket, and you'll be helping us support people living with sight loss. To find out more or to enter, just head to www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Christmas Raffle. Thanks to our friends at Hoo Farm, Dudley Zoo, Mini Pro Golf Park, Flip Out, Haberley Trail, Taylor's Green Graces and Mad Hatter's Tea Room for donating such fabulous prizes. The draw date is December the 21st, so get yours now to make sure you don't miss out. One of the easiest ways you can support Beacon is with stamps. Yes, you heard me right. Please don't throw away any stamps from Christmas cards you receive in the coming weeks. We can use them to raise funds to support people with sight loss. You can drop them off in any of our shops and make a difference to people in your community. And if you can't get into our stores, you can post them to us by sending them to Fundraising, Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Sedgley, WV4 6AZ. As usual, thanks for all your support. And Merry Christmas from everyone here at the Beacon Centre.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Now we have more local news from Angela, Ed, Ian, and first up, Christine.
Calls have been made for free parking at Wolverhampton's Civic Centre as rapid testing to curb the spread of COVID-19 is rolled out. Conservatives in the city claimed the charges, costing a minimum of £1.50, could potentially act as a deterrent to people coming forward. But the claims have been disputed by Wolverhampton Council due to parking directly next to the centre being free since day one of testing. A spokesman for the authority said the site at St Peter's car park was free to anyone attending the centre to get a test to see if they have symptoms. Conservative councillor Simon Bennett said, "At a time when the council is rightly encouraging as many people as possible to come forward to get a free test for COVID-19, it is incredible that they haven't lifted parking charges at the Civic Centre." The Conservative group is calling for parking charges for those getting tests to be stopped immediately and for this information to be publicised widely to encourage more people to come forward for tests. A spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said, "Free car parking by the Civic Centre has been made available since day one of testing in order to make access as easy as possible for anyone who wants a test." St Peter's Car Park, situated directly next door to the Civic Centre on ground level, offers free parking during the test centre's opening hours. The free parking is specifically for people attending to get a test. The car park is ideally located next to the Civic Centre and has capacity for anyone coming for a test. The car park is outdoors and allows sufficient space for users to socially distance.
A new cycle hire scheme is due to launch across the West Midlands next year, offering more people the chance to cycle around towns and cities. The operator of London's famous Santander Cycles has been appointed by Transport for West Midlands to offer bikes for hire in Birmingham, Coventry, Dudley, Sandwell, Solihull, Wolverhampton and Walsall in the spring. Initially, contractor Serco will provide 1,500 bikes for hire, of which 10% will be e-bikes. The pedal cycles will all have three gears to cope with the hilly parts of the region, and they'll be fitted with high-quality laser safety lights that project an image of a bicycle 5 metres in front of the bike. Almost all parts are being made in the West Midlands. The bikes are manufactured in Stratford-upon-Avon by Pashley Cycles. The locking system is being produced by Coventry-based RDM Group and PHA Europe in West Bromwich. The plastic mouldings for the bikes and docks are made in Telford by LVS. Travel for West Midlands, which is part of the West Midlands Combined Authority, has agreed a 5-year contract to offer more people the opportunity to enjoy cycling and provide a convenient alternative to the car for shorter journeys. Mayor of the West Midlands, Andy Street, said, "During lockdown, we have seen a huge increase in people cycling around our region. So it is the right time to be starting a cycle hire scheme, and I am delighted that Serco's cycle hire business, who have a great track record running cycle hire in London and Edinburgh, are working with us here in the West Midlands."
A family has hit out at Dudley Council after bosses demanded they remove a professional mural of Steve Bull from the front of their garage, a gift for a father's 70th birthday. Grace Stockton spent £500 on getting the image painted of the Wolves legend on the garage of her parents' home in Norton Stourbridge. It was a 70th birthday treat for her dad, Eddie Solly, a huge Wanderers fan. The artwork has even had the seal of approval from Steve Bull himself and has been there since September. Dudley Council threatened to take formal action unless it was removed by January the 4th. The authority sent the family a letter explaining the adverts needed to be removed. But today, leader of the council, Patrick Harley, has said no further action will be taken. Members of the community rallied round to support the family. Tony Sidebottom, a nearby resident, said, "Absolutely shocking. It's his garage and it's not harming anyone. There's so much worse things happening right now." Grace said Steve Bull had even FaceTimed her father last week and Mr. Solly took him outside and showed him the garage. She said he thought it was incredible. She added that the family had received nothing but support from neighbours, so they were shocked to receive the letter from Dudley Council. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of the council, said today, "We have received a complaint about the garage door and therefore have to act on it, and we hope people understand we have a duty to represent everyone."
Nearly £1 million has been handed to a charity to complete a major regeneration project on the site of a former bus depot. YMCA Black Country Group secured £941,000 from the Black Country Local Enterprise Partnership, LEP, for the second phase of the scheme in Wolverhampton. The project, dubbed the YMCA Cleveland Road City Gateway, will transform the area on the former bus depot next to the old Royal Hospital. Steve Clay, CEO of the YMCA Black Country Group, said, "YMCA has been serving Wolverhampton residents for over 100 years, but this is the first time it has invested in permanent routes. YMCA's Cleveland Road City Gateway scheme represents a commitment to the city of Wolverhampton and to the wider Black Country. The deal between the charity and Wolverhampton Council on behalf of the LEP was signed off on Friday using money from the Black Country Growth Deal cash pot. The funding will be used to create a new childcare nursery, community training area, and will bring 300 square metres of additional retail units on the site." Tom Wesley, Deputy Lieutenant Chairman of the Black Country LEP, said, "We are delighted to be supporting the YMCA's Cleveland Road City Gateway scheme, and in doing so, not only support the ongoing physical redevelopment of Wolverhampton, but also to be investing in the people of Wolverhampton. Now, more than ever, we need to be focused on supporting our communities from childcare through to skills training and business startups to ensure the Black Country continues to focus on and strengthen the local economy for everyone.
The boss of Pubs and Restaurants Group, Marston's, believes the hospitality industry may return to normal in the second half of 2021. Chief Executive Ralph Findlay was speaking after the Wolverhampton-based group announced its annual results. The next 2 to 3 months will continue to be difficult, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, he said. I am optimistic that once we get through to March and see restrictions begin to be lifted, we can target normality in the second half of next year. Marston's reported a pre-tax loss of £397.1 million, but on an underlying basis that was reduced to £22 million. It has been an extraordinary, exceptional and very difficult year. The impact of coronavirus on our numbers is very clear. Next year's figures will be helped by £280 million profit from the disposal of the beer company to the Carlsberg Marston's Brewing joint venture, explained Mr. Findlay. He said Marston's had done better than expected when sites reopened in July and the group outperformed the market for the last quarter of the financial year. But since October, the new tier restrictions had hit the business hard. Mr. Findlay said he thought the business could return to normal, but feared many rival hospitality businesses would not be in the same position.
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello, and yes, it's time once again for the flashback quiz. All the answers you need will be found later in Flashback Rogers this week in history section. But for now, here are the questions. Question 1. What alternative name is sometimes used to describe Christmas? Question 2. In what year was the carol Silent Night first performed? Question 3. What happened on Christmas Day in 1914 in World War I? Question 4. Who succeeded Mikhail Gorbachev on Boxing Day 1991 and became the leader of Russia? Question 5. In what year did Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs premiere? And question 6. Which Christmas classic film appeared in December 1940? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later. So for now, good luck!
Cheers for those, Mina. Now we go back to local news, starting with Ian.
A grant of £159,758 has been awarded to Wolverhampton Art Gallery in a move to protect the crown jewels of UK culture. The Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport and Arts Council England has announced further awards from its £1.57 billion Culture Recovery Fund. £58.9 million has been awarded through the fund's Capital Kickstart Grants Programme and over £165 million has been offered through the Repayable Finance Programme. The Capital Kickstart grants will help cultural organisations across the country cover additional costs caused by COVID-related delays or fundraising shortfalls to their capital projects, including building works, refurbishments and large-scale equipment purchases. £159,758 has been awarded to Wolverhampton Art Gallery from the programme to help deliver a project which will help strengthen the region's cultural infrastructure. Wolverhampton Art Gallery is redeveloping and improving the building, including the relocation of the cafe, reception and retail area, improvements to the main reception and learning space, and refurbishments to increase the space for exhibitions and collections, interpretation and create a digital learning suite. City of Wolverhampton Council Cabinet Member for City Economy, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, said, "City of Wolverhampton Council is delighted to receive this funding. It comes at a key moment for the city, with the opening of British Art Show 9 in March 2021 and other cultural events taking place which will draw people into Wolverhampton. Culture forms a key part of our COVID recovery strategy, focusing on vibrant high streets and communities."
Sir Lenny Henry has penned a drama inspired by his mother's stories about leaving Jamaica for the West Midlands in the 1950s. The Star, 62, who grew up in Dudley, said the series will be a tribute to the giants who came before us and walked cold streets to create new lives for themselves. Fictional series Three Little Birds will air on ITV, following the adventures of gregarious sisters and a Bible-loving acquaintance as they board a ship heading for a new life. Sir Lenny said, "My mother spoke often about how difficult life was back in the day when she first arrived in Britain to begin her new life. The stories she told, and indeed the narratives my brothers and sisters beguiled me with over the dinner table, made me think about writing a fictional account of three Caribbean women. They all get to the UK with one thing on their minds, a new life." Although these are fictional accounts, my mother's narrative will run throughout these stories, and hopefully the stories of other post-Windrush arrivals will trigger memories, smiles and tears too. ITV's head of drama, Polly Hill, said, "I fell in love with characters Leah, Chantrell and Hosanna the moment I read Lenny's script, and I think the audience will want to go on their journey with them."
A leading veterinary group is looking to open a new emergency hospital in Wolverhampton, providing 24-hour care for pets. Vets Now, which has more than 60 outlets across the country, has applied to the council for planning permission to take over a large vacant warehouse unit in Well Lane, Wensfield. Situated on the Neatchells Lane industrial estate, the premises was previously home to Airspace Trampoline Park. The site is easily accessible by road from the main A4124 Wensfield Way route, linking the town with Willenhall and Darlaston. A design and access statement submitted alongside the plans says, "Vets Now is looking to provide a new hospital in the West Midlands and has considered a number of possible sites throughout the region. The nature of the hospital requires that it is both easily accessible and visible. The Well Lane site provides both of these features. Vets Now currently has over 58 clinics and two pet emergency hospitals in Manchester and Glasgow, providing dedicated out-of-hours emergency and critical care for pets and lending support to more than 1,000 local veterinary practices."
Rapid progress is being made on plans for a £36 million university park in Dudley. The work on Castle Hill has been gathering pace in recent weeks, with work taking shape on the development of a university park. It already includes the Black Country and Marches Institute of Technology, specialising in higher level technical education, opening in September 2021, and the Very Light Rail Innovation Centre, due to be completed in March 2022. The next stage for the development is the planned Health Innovation Centre. Like the Institute of Technology, it will offer training opportunities for people to develop higher level skills in healthcare, helping to address the shortage of people to take up the much needed roles in local NHS and beyond. This will also serve as a facility to the resident community to support health and wellbeing activity. To make way for the new facility, the former Dudley Hippodrome and Bingo Hall will be demolished. Dudley Council's Cabinet is being asked to approve plans for a Memorandum of Understanding, which is a formal agreement between the authority and Dudley College of Technology to develop the detailed application for this next phase. The signed document will agree at the next phase of the plans to submit a bid for funding. Councillor Ian Kettle, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said, "This is a major development for the town, and I am pleased we are making rapid progress despite the restrictions caused by the pandemic."
An MP has called for a permanent tribute to a proud Wolfronian and former Wolverhampton Council leader who passed away after a short illness. Neville Paton was first elected as a councillor in 1987 and had represented Oxley Park and Bushbury North before stepping down from the role in 2014. The honorary alderman led the authority from 2008 to 2010 when it was run by the Conservatives in an alliance with the Liberal Democrats. Now Jane Stevenson, MP for Wolverhampton North East, has called for something to be named in Mr. Paton's honour following his death in October. Ms. Stevenson, whose constituency includes Bushbury, said, "I was immensely saddened to hear of Neville's passing in October, and my sympathies are with Neville's wife Pat and his whole family. There can be no doubt that Neville absolutely loved Wolverhampton and took pride in serving the local residents of Bushbury for nearly 30 years. As Neville was also a former leader of the council, I feel it would be appropriate for the council to permanently mark Neville's extraordinary service in some way, and I have asked the council to look into this. There have been some interesting suggestions, including naming a new road in his honour, or the nearby Bee Lane playing fields. I'm sure the council can find a fitting way to pay tribute to Neville's service to Wolverhampton.
Getting us into the festive spirit, up next we have Mina's Christmas Cracker.
Hello and welcome to Mina's Christmas Cracker. Just like a traditional Christmas cracker, but without arguments over who got the best gift, here I share with you some Christmas trivia, a brain teaser to get you thinking, and of course some tremendous jokes. Did you know that the tradition of putting tangerines in stockings comes from the 12th century French nuns who left socks full of fruit, nuts and tangerines at the houses of the poor? Many parts of the Christmas tree can actually be eaten, with needles being a good source of vitamin C. Hanging presents on trees may come from the Druids, who believed the tree was the giver of all good things. Since 1947, Oslo has sent a Christmas tree to London to thank us for our help in the Second World War. And finally, Jingle Bells was the first song broadcasted from space when Gemini's six astronauts Tom Stratford and Wally Schirra sang it on December 16, 1965. Now the brain teaser. A short one this week. Are you ready? Which eight-letter word begins and ends with he? So, which eight-letter word begins and ends with he? He meaning H-E. Have a think about that, and I'll reveal answer later, along with the answers in this week's flashback quiz. And now, the moment you've no doubt all been waiting for. Yes, it's time for the Christmas jokes. What did Adam say the day before Christmas? It's Christmas Eve! Which government scheme supports Christmas dinner? Eat Sprout to help out! Why was the snowman rummaging in the bag of carrots? He was picking his nose! That's it for Mina's Christmas Cracker. I hope you all have a fantastic Christmas and a happy new year. See you in 2021.
Another cracking performance there from Mina. Now, as a bonus feature, we go to Simon, who shares with us his top 10 Christmas songs.
Hello, I'm Simon Wilson, the IT support and training technician here at the Beacon Centre and also a presenter at Black Country Radio 2. Now, I've been asked to compile my top 10 Christmas playlist, and for anyone who knows me, you'll know just how hard this has been. I love the old Christmas classics from Bing Crosby, Dean Martin and Nat King Cole, all the way up to the newer stuff from Kelly Clarkson, The Darkness and Leona Lewis. So as you can imagine, this is pretty much an impossible task for me. But anyway, here's what I've come up with. So in at 10 to start the list then, it's Wham and Last Christmas. If you're one of these people who plays Whamageddon, that wouldn't be on your top 10 list. So just forget that one, shall we? In at 9, Brenda Lee, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, by far the best version of that song. In at 8, Boney M, It's Mary's Boy Child. Just love that tune, just makes you feel instantly happy, doesn't it? In at 7, Band-Aid and Do They Know It's Christmas? The only version of that song you need. Discount all the others, that one's the best. In at 6, Wizard, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. In at 5, it's Slade and Merry Christmas Everybody. Of course, the iconic line there from Noddy Holder, It's Christmas! In at 4, Elton John and Step Into Christmas. In at 3, it's Shakin' Stevens, Merry Christmas Everyone. At 2, the ultimate party songs at Christmas, Mariah Carey and All I Want for Christmas Is You. And to top the list, in at 1, my all-time favourite Christmas song and topping my top 10 Christmas list, it's The Pogues featuring Kirsty MacColl and Fairy Tale of New York. What Christmas is complete without these 10 songs? They instantly lift your mood and get you into the Christmas spirit, even in COVID times. I can't imagine not stepping into Christmas, not wishing snow was falling all around me, and not hearing Noddy scream, It's Christmas. Can you?
I can't know, Simon. That's a fair point and a great list. Now we have our final section of local news, starting off with Angela.
The owner of an Indian restaurant has come up with a warm gesture to help families in need by donating DIY curry kits to a food bank and soup kitchen. Amina Rahman from Laraj in Lower Gornal has put together 50 make-your-own curry boxes which he has delivered to Dudley charity Heaven's Kitchen. In previous years, Amina has cooked up hot meals for residents at care homes as a Christmas treat, and this year he had offered to deliver hot Indian meals for dozens of people attending the Salop Street-based soup kitchen. But due to strict food hygiene rules, charity workers reluctantly had to decline his kind offer. So instead, the generous businessman has given them curry packs, which they will hand out to some families who have cooking facilities and also use some of the ingredients themselves to cook a meal for others. The boxes, which contain a packet of rice, naan bread, a tin of tomatoes, a tin of chickpeas and a sachet of spices, need meat and or vegetables to be added to make a curry. Amina, who has run the Louise Street restaurant for 22 years, said, "I hope people will enjoy using these boxes and can put together a satisfying and tasty meal. I had asked the charity if I could supply hot meals from the restaurant, but unfortunately they were unable to accept cooked fresh food. So I'm trying to do the next best thing and give families a curry kit in a box which they can use to cook up their own Indian meal. I'm always keen to support good causes locally and hope to put on a fundraising dinner for the Mayor of Dudley's charity in the future."
A ukulele band from a Staffordshire village has released a charity single in aid of a Black Country NHS trust. The song, performed by the Peartown Ukes from Purton, is called Angels Without Wings and pays tribute to hard-working frontline health workers. The band has so far raised more than £500 in aid of the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust charity's COVID-19 fund. Julie Gorman, aged 51 from Purton, who wrote the lyrics, said, "We should have been doing our first festival this year in Shrewsbury, which was cancelled. I was convinced something good should come, so in July I sat down at the same time I should have been on stage and just tried to think forward to Christmas and what we would be looking back on in the year. At Christmas time, there is a lot of angel imagery around. The angels were among us this year. They were working in the hospitals, putting themselves at risk, trying to fight COVID. We are up to £500 at the minute with donations. The song is in aid of the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust. At the moment, patients in hospital, they can't get any visitors. So the thing people would normally take in, like newspapers and toiletries, they can't get. So part of the money is helping patients get things like that. It is also to give the staff, doctors and nurses, more comfortable chairs and things for when they have got a little bit of time off." Ms. Gorman has been playing the ukulele for 2 years. The band was assembled last year, but the pandemic has limited their ability to meet up. The band's name was influenced by Purton's history, as the town was once known as Pear Town, due to a number of pear trees that once grew there. The song can be found at www.peartownukes.com/angels-without-wings.
Black Country comedian Doreen Tipton has released a new book for children. Doreen, also known as Jill Jordan, has released Poetry in My Ocean, her second book, which introduces youngsters to some of the amazing creatures that live in and around our oceans. Filled with illustrations and quirky fun poems, the book is aimed for children aged 6 and above, or younger children if their parents can read it for them. Doreen said, "I've set a special challenge to any parents attempting to read Myrtle the Purple Turtle. It's an interesting tongue twister." The comedian and panto star's first children's book, The Giant Panteater and Other Curious Creatures, was a great hit with parents, children and schools, and even received celebrity endorsements. Performer Debbie McGee said, "Doreen has found a way to bring intelligent humour to children in an educating but entertaining way. I couldn't put it down. It's fabulous in every way." In this new book, readers get to meet the Puffin Who Lost His Stuffing, the Felt-Tipped Penguin, the polo bear, the waterproof seal, the shrimp with a limp, and other fun characters. Both books are available direct from her website, doreenforkids.com.
A teenager is hoping to break his way into the Olympics after hearing that breakdance is to be one of the sports in the 2024 Paris Games. Adrian Brown, 19, from Wolverhampton, who is better known as AJ the Cypher Cat on the dancing circuit, is one of the UK's top performers in the dance form, which originated in New York in the early 1970s. The International Olympic Committee this week announced that breakdancing, or breaking as it is often called, will be included in the list of sports represented at the Games in Paris. "It made me really happy," says AJ, who is studying graphic design at Birmingham City University. "I've been dancing since I was 5 years old, and I've always had the dream that breaking would be able to provide me with a job. I'm now going to do everything I can to get the chance to represent my country." With plenty of international titles under his belt, he stands a fair chance. In March this year, he reached the semi-final of the Red Bull BC1 UK contest in London, and it will fall to Dance Sport England, which has traditionally represented ballroom and Latin dancing, to oversee the search for the best breakdancers to represent Team GB in Paris. Jane Jones of Dance Sport England says the organisation is very excited that breaking has been formally accepted into the Olympic movement. She says the domestic breakdance scene is bigger than many people realise and full of very talented and extremely athletic competitors. Team GB did not send any breaking competitors to the Youth Olympics in 2018, but the British Olympic Association and UK Sport, which provides funding for elite Olympic and Paralympic sport, is now in the process of formulating a plan.
A Black Country bar and restaurant has applied to become a place of worship to allow it to open under Tier 3 restrictions. The Cockandbull.co in Stourbridge's High Street has been forced to remain closed after Dudley was placed into the very high alert category, along with most of the West Midlands. Pubs and restaurants in Tier 3 are only allowed to offer takeaway delivery and click and collect services. Those in Tier 2 regions, which includes nearby Worcestershire, can reopen, but only if they provide a substantial meal. While residents living in a Tier 3 area can attend places of worship for a service, as long as they don't mix with anyone outside of their household or support bubble. Bosses at the cockandbull.co have since applied to the government for the building premises to become a place of worship. Posting their application form for certifying a place of meeting for religious worship on Facebook, Bosses said, "So places of worship can open in Tier 3, you say, Boris? Well, in that case, feel free to join the House of Cock and Bull, pending approval, of course." But Bosses at the popular venue said they were just trying to make their regulars laugh and didn't expect it to be taken seriously. Jake Bayliss, one of the managers, said, "There's a lot of doom and gloom out there, so we just tried to put a little tongue-and-cheek happy spin on it to try and make people laugh, really. We are still waiting to hear back, so we don't know if it's been successful."
Thanks, Ian. Now it's that time again. Take it away, Roger.
Hello everybody, this is Roger with the last flashback section of 2020. So this week I've looked for events that happened during Christmas week from past years, and as ever, where you'll find the answers to this festive quiz that was set earlier. Well, here goes. December the 24th, 336 AD, although Christmas celebrations started in the early 300s, the first celebration of Christmas, sometimes known as the Feast of the Nativity, was recorded in Rome on December the 24th in AD 336, which corresponded to the date of the winter solstice in the Roman calendar. On December the 24th, 1818, the famous Christmas carol Silent Night, Holy Night is performed for the first time. The lyrics had been written by Father Joseph Moore, and the melody was composed by organist Franz Xaver Gruber. Moore asked Gruber to compose the melody and accompaniment for guitar because at the time their Churchorgan was broken. December the 25th, 1914, British and German troops met in what had become known as the Christmas Truce. They met with each other, sang Christmas carols, exchanged season's greetings and gifts, and even played football. The fighting resumed the following day. By the following Christmas in 1915, tensions had heightened due to heavy losses on both sides, and the men were given orders not to repeat the previous year's truce. December the 26th in 1991, the former Soviet republics declared their independence and create the Commonwealth of Independent States. Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev had resigned the day before and handed over its powers, including the Soviet nuclear missile launching codes, to Russian President Boris Yeltsin. On December the 21st in 1937, always a Christmas favourite, Walt Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs premiered. It was his first feature-length animation and the world's first animated feature made in full colour and sound. Many in the film industry predicted it would flop and bankrupt the company. But instead, the film grossed $6.5 million, making it the most successful motion picture of 1938 and the most successful sound film ever made to that date. On December the 20th in 1946, Frank Capra's Christmas classic It's a Wonderful Life, starring James Stewart and Donna Reed, premieres. Although it did poorly during its initial release, it's now one of the most popular films everywhere. Although nominated for 5 awards, the only award it actually won was a technical award for its fake snow, which was new at the time. Well, folks, that's the quiz for this week. In fact, it's the last quiz for this year. So this is Rod saying bye for now. Have a very good Christmas and a happy new year. And I'll send the next quiz on to you on the 6th of January in 2021. But for now, this is Rod saying bye for now. Ta-ra!
That's Boston, Roger. Cheers for that. Now we have the weather with Mina.
The weather for this week will mostly be a washout, with temperatures hovering around 10 degrees. Moderate wind will be constant, as will cloud cover, the sun rarely making an appearance. As a result, we expect low UV levels all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 8:20 a.m. for the sunrise and 3:57 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 18th of December, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees. On Saturday 19th of December, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees expected. Moving on to Sunday 20th of December, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees. On Monday 21st of December, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. On Tuesday 22nd of December, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. Moving on to Wednesday 23rd of December, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees. On Christmas Eve, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. And finally, on Christmas Day, it doesn't look like we will get snow, with current forecasts predicting light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. That's your weather forecast for this week. So, as always, enjoy the weather.
So, it seems like there won't be a white Christmas this year. Anyway, I wonder how local teams have been getting on in the Premier League as they enter the busy festive period. And I know just the man to get us up to speed. It's, of course, our very own Ian.
On Saturday, Albion were once again beaten in the Premier League as they fell to a 2-1 loss at Newcastle. In what was a dreadful first half from Slaven Bilic's side, the Baggies fell behind after just 23 seconds when some poor defending allowed Miguel Almirón to fire in. The hosts should have gone in at the break 2-0 up, but Joe Linton took the bizarre decision to go for goal himself instead of squaring for an unmarked Callum Wilson, who would have had a tap-in. The Baggies emerged after the break a different side and got back on terms thanks to a wonderful finish from Darnell Furlong. But while they went on to see a lot more of the ball, they struggled to create clear-cut chances. And that led to two former Baggies conspiring to give Newcastle the win. It was ex-Loney Jacob Murphy who got the assist, with the winner whipping in a wonderfully inviting cross. And there waiting to head it home was Dwight Gale, who was so prolific for the Baggies while on loan at the Hawthorns in the 2018-2019 season. It all fell apart on Saturday for Wolves in second half stoppage time as substitute Anwar El Ghazi's penalty sealed a big win for Villa at Molineux. Nuno Espirito Santo's side had the better opportunities, but as had been a trend throughout this season, they lacked a killer touch and were made to pay at the death. El Ghazi coolly tucked away a 94th minute spot kick after Nelson Semedo tripped John McGinn, while both teams ended with 10 men. Douglas Luiz and João Moutinho each dismissed after two bookings. Left to rue missed chances, most notably from Leander Dendonca and Fabio Silva, Nuno will be furious with the outcome. Dean Smith, on the other hand, will be delighted to have stuck at it and come away with the spoils. It was an infuriating, sickening defeat as far as Wolves are concerned. But if you don't take your chances and make silly errors at the back, you are always going to be in danger. Slaven Bilic declared Albion are very much alive following their defeat at Newcastle on Saturday. And while they may not have won at the Etihad Stadium, they proved that is true after securing a 1-1 draw against Pep Guardiola's superstars. In what was a pulsating clash in Manchester, the Baggies had to withstand heavy pressure with the hosts enjoying 77% possession. But they were resilient, organised and defended superbly throughout to come away with a point. They had Sam Johnston to thank late on, with the goalkeeper making three outstanding saves, two of which arrived in stoppage time. But the Baggies deserved their point for the discipline and determination they showed over the 90 minutes. City opened the scoring with their only real clear-cut chance of the first half, when Ilkay Gundogan fired in from 8 yards. Bilic's men levelled before the break, with Semi Ayaze's low drive deflected off Ruben Dias to sail past Edison. And the Baggies then showed bundles of grit and character after the break to hold on and move within 3 points of 16th placed Brighton. Wolves displayed incredible grit and character as Pedro Neto's emphatic 95th minute strike sealed a stunning comeback victory over Chelsea. A special Tuesday night at Molineux, which, after a scrappy first half, saw the Blues take the lead shortly into the second, courtesy of Olivier Giroud's volley, which just squirmed past Rui Patricio and required goal-line technology to confirm that the ball had indeed crossed the line. But Nuno Espirito Santo's side fought back in the most amazing fashion. Daniel Podence levelled the scores with a moment of magic, surprising Edouard Mendy at his near post. Then, after briefly winning a penalty which was chalked off following a VAR review, Neto displayed his immense quality by thundering the ball home deep into added time, sealing a magnificent triumph and sparking huge celebrations after the final whistle. Results against Chelsea at Molineux in the past have acted as a springboard, and perhaps we will reflect on this terrific turnaround in a similar style. Beating them 2-1 in 2018-19 was arguably what gave them the belief to eventually finish 7th in the Premier League, while a 5-2 hammering last term shocked them into life. We will have to see what the future holds, of course, but what we know for now is that this was a truly sensational win. At the time of recording, Wolves find themselves in 10th place on 20 points, just 3 points off the top 4.
Cheers, Ian. Now for the final term, we have David, who this week gives us the history behind how the UK first ended up joining the European Common Market.
Turn back the clock to August the 10th, 1961. And that's when the trouble started. That is the date when the United Kingdom first formally applied for membership of the European Economic Community, or Common Market, what was to become the European Union. And the answer was a definite no. The French President, General Charles de Gaulle, booted our application into touch. His unilateral veto came as a shock to the other members of the Six. It came as a shock too to the British. A bit ungrateful, some might say, since Britain had given him refuge after the fall of France in 1940. In a press conference in January 1963, de Gaulle said England had stood off from taking part when the six states got together and set up a free trade area of its own, the European Free Trade Association, which also comprised Austria, Denmark, Norway, Portugal, Sweden and Switzerland. Now England wanted to enter the European Economic Community on its own terms. While the other six states fitted together very nicely, England was insular. But he didn't rule out the possibility that we could change our outlook. It is very possible that Britain's own evolution and the evolution of the universe might bring the English little by little towards the continent, whatever delays the achievement might demand, he said. Well, that was telling us. The EEC had been formed by the Treaty of Rome in 1957, bringing together France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium and Luxembourg, the Six, in a common market, but also to lay the foundations of an ever closer union among the peoples of Europe. Initially sniffy about the whole project, a decline in Britain's economic performance towards the end of the decade brought a change of heart, and Prime Minister Harold Macmillan started moves for an application to join. And the man in his government who had responsibility for Britain's negotiations was the Europhile Ted Heath. Macmillan, who had the cushion of a big majority in the House of Commons, prepared the ground carefully and sought to reassure Commonwealth countries. In moving a motion to support an application for membership, Macmillan told MPs that Britain had a long tradition of isolation, but had always abandoned isolationism when the world had been in danger from tyrants or aggression. Most of us recognise that in a changing world, if we are not to be left behind and to drop out of the mainstream of the world's life, we must be prepared to change and adapt, he said. The vote on August 4, 1961 was unambiguous. The House of Commons adopted the government's proposal by 313 votes to 5. Future Labour leader Michael Foote was one of those 5 no's, seeing the EEC as a capitalist club, but the rest of the Labour opposition abstained, along with about 50 Conservatives. The die was cast. Now over to you, Chief Negotiator Ted. The veto by de Gaulle was to be a bitter blow to Heath. It prompted one of his most famous speeches, in which he said that Britain would not turn its back on the European project. We are part of Europe by geography, tradition, history, culture and civilization. We shall continue to work with our friends in Europe for the true unity and strength of this continent. By 1967, a Labour government under Harold Wilson was in power and had another go. Yet again, de Gaulle vetoed Britain's application, despite the other 5 EEC countries having said that they would support negotiations towards British membership. Britain wasn't ready to join the EEC, de Gaulle said, but if it could transform itself, then France would welcome its historic conversion. It had shunned the creation of the EEC and shown deep-seated hostility towards European construction, he said. The good news, relatively speaking, was that de Gaulle spoke of having exceptional esteem, attachment and respect for Britain. But the upshot was that this was le grand non. Wilson told the Commons afterwards, "I do not agree that we are knocking on the door and being humiliated. We have slammed down our application on the table. There it is and there it remains." Why was de Gaulle so opposed? That has proved fertile ground for historians' debate, but one theory is that it was essentially rooted in anti-Americanism. Although portrayed as the villain of the piece, given what was to follow, it is at least arguable that he may well have been right in his belief that Britain was not psychologically prepared to be in Europe. Despite the second de Gaulle rebuff, the big picture from the aspect of British politics was that there was political unanimity on the issue among the leadership of the major parties at the time, although that was to crumble. It was obvious that so long as de Gaulle remained in power, he was a roadblock to Britain's membership. Time, though, was running out for the French leader. In 1968, France was rocked by student demonstrations and worker strikes, and these eroded his popular support. Then, in 1969, the 79-year-old president called a referendum on regional reorganisation and a reform of the Senate, but lost and resigned and retired. After de Gaulle's departure from power, he died the following year, it was all plain sailing, relatively speaking. Ted Heath came to office with a Conservative administration in June 1970 with a modest majority and lost no time in pursuing his dream of taking Britain into the common market, helped along by a now supportive French president, Georges Pompidou. Negotiations began almost immediately, and after a 6-day debate, the Commons approved the accession to the EEC on October 28, 1971. The 356 to 244 vote was a victory for Heath, which exceeded expectations, as the political battle lines were complicated and many MPs were on personal political journeys. As would become familiar, there was profound internal divisions within the parties. On the Labour side, 69 MPs supported the Tory government, one of whom was the deputy leader, Roy Jenkins, and 20 abstained, despite a 3-line Labour whip to vote against. On the Tory side, there was a free vote, and 39 MPs voted against, many of whom feared that there would be an erosion of sovereignty. Labour leader Harold Wilson, who had applied for entry as Prime Minister only 4 years before, voted against on the grounds that Heath had no mandate for a decision so big and that there should be a general election, and also on the terms of entry. According to future Labour Foreign Secretary David Owen, Wilson's attitude was, You have to be able to ride more horses than one. If you can't, you shouldn't be in the circus. Among those voting against were Tony Benn, future Prime Minister James Callaghan, Neil Kinnock, who much later became Vice President of the European Commission, and Maverick Tory Enoch Powell. On October 6, 1972, the Queen gave the royal assent to the accession of the United Kingdom to the European Community, which came into effect on January 1, 1973. At this momentous point in history, which would shape the direction of the nation for a generation, Ted Heath made a television broadcast in which he famously assured, "There are some in this country who fear that going into Europe we shall in some way sacrifice independence and sovereignty. These fears, I need hardly say, are completely unjustified." And in a speech at a banquet celebrating Britain's entry, he said the unified market was only a first step. "What we are building is a community whose scope will gradually extend until it covers virtually the whole field of collective human endeavour." In 1975, the British public cemented Parliament's decision by voting 2-1 to remain in the EEC. So that was that. The Europe issue was all sorted. And for quite a long time, it actually was.
Thanks, David. Now we have the quiz answers with Mina. Are you ready, Mina?
I'm ready, as always. So here are your answers for this week's quiz. Question 1. What alternative name is sometimes used to describe Christmas? The answer, the Feast of Nativity. Question 2. In what year was the carol Silent Night first performed? The answer is 1818. Question 3. What happened on Christmas Day in 1914 in World War I? The answer here is, there was an unofficial truce between British and German troops. Question 4. Who succeeded Mikhail Gorbachev on Boxing Day 1991 and became the leader of Russia? The answer, Boris Yeltsin. Question 5. In what year did Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs premiere? And of course, it was 1937. And finally, question 6. Which Christmas classic film appeared in December 1940? And the answer, It's a Wonderful Life. I hope you all did well with that distinctly festive flashback quiz. And speaking of being festive, here's the answer from my Christmas cracker brain teaser. I asked, which 8-letter word begins and ends with he? And the answer is a headache. Now, let's hope you have none of those over Christmas. I'll be back again with another in the new year. But for now, we end with a flight of fancy from Graham Fisher.
Consider 'tis the time of good cheer. Herewith a seasonal tale of mornings crisp by dewfrost, burgeoning holly trees, and all the innocent excitement of impending Yuletide festivities. Alternately, if it's the height of summer right now where you are, do please use your imagination instead, although in our climate there's no guarantee it's not freezing cold in July. Anyway, one reaches a stage in life where its meaning is illuminated considerably by contemplating the works of great minds. And so, whilst musing on the philosophy of Descartes, I think, therefore I am. At least I think I am. I think. Actually, that's not what you think, but it is more accurately the thoughts of an acquaintance of mine, Dennis Descartes, currently resident in Ward 6, Tipton Respite for Retired Head Cases. And aided only by the soft ambience of the cool evening, together with my copious consumption of Budweiser beers with Brasso chasers. Don't try that at home, kids. I dreamt all of this up. But it doesn't make it any the less truthful. So settle in that armchair whilst I relate it to you, dear friends, and decide for yourselves as I whisk you on a journey through history to answer two of the most enigmatic questions ever posed in man's incessant search for knowledge. Namely, what is the origin of roses and castles on narrowboats? And why is there a fairy on the top of your Christmas tree? Listen and learn, my fellow conspirators. Listen and learn. Despite the trappings of fabulous wealth bestowed upon his dynasty by ownership of the sole banana-bending factory in the whole of the tiny Eastern European state of Spotifacia, young Xavier Moonstruck III sought only to lead a normal life, regardless of his being a hunchback midget with halitosis and prolapsed arches. A magical, enchanting kingdom, limited only by imagination, Spotifacia was the land that time forgot, and life for Xavier was idyllic. But she wanted more. His father, Xavier Moonstruck II, had been an avid collector and had accrued a sizable compilation of works by Rembrandt and Stradivarius. Unfortunately, his judgment fell some way behind his enthusiasm, and too late did he learn of Rembrandt's inability to fashion a violin and Stradivarius's total incompetence with a brush. Worried that his inheritance was being squitted, Xavier tried one day to remonstrate with his father, who was in one of his curious dressing up and drinking phases. Adorned in miner's boots, silk stockings, figure-hugging basque, and a gas mask, he chastised his child with, "We're not all mad, you know," before consuming a gallon tin of varnish. "A horrible suffering, but a beautiful finish," the mortician commented dryly, and that was that. But art was in the boy's blood, and so Xavier decided to develop his skills at painting. Yet what to paint? Inspiration came in the form of a long, narrow vessel, unadorned and unlovely, emerging from the underground stores with his precious cargo of yellow sticks, on their way to be bent to the regulation angle. A chill afternoon, as winter approached, saw Xavier sitting at the side of a boat, gazing abroad for ideas. The family castle, with its turrets and moat, appeared beautiful but barren in the dank afternoon. "Eureka!" he exclaimed, in a flash of genius, which, little did he know, would influence the boat world for centuries to come. "I will brighten this craft with gaily adorned castles to remind me of the mellow morns of summer, and I will imbue them with that most quintessential of summer flowers, the rose." At that precise, sublime moment, his ecstasy was stymied by the arrival of a former cross-dressing acquaintance of his deceased father, attired in a frock, with a crown resting on his head and a pair of cellophane wings on his back and a wand. "Hello, Xavier," said the newcomer. "I've been out all day selling Christmas trees, and I've only got this one left. Where do you think I could stick it?" So now you know, dear friends, how roses and castles came to be painted on your boat, and also why the fairy sits on top of your Christmas tree. Merry Christmas from all in Ward 6.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org. or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe. Ta-ra!